We're talking about the rich musical tradition and the power of African-American spirituals. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What an absolute pleasure to have ethnomusicologist Jonathan Overby. He broadens our musical horizons, brings us world music every Saturday evening as executive producer and host of The Road to Higher Ground on the NPR News and Music Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you have a favorite spiritual or one that lifts you up when you feel defeated? Do you sing spirituals in church? Join in 800-642-1234. Dr. Overby, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's actually my first time being on your program. Delighted to be here.
Oh, good, good. Well, first, some context. What defines a traditional African-American spiritual?
Well, I think before you jump into a definition of it, I think there's a backdrop that's important to present. And it is rooted to this amazing aspect linked to the history of spirituals, and how a massive group of enslaved people, shackled against their will, brutalized, were separated from their immediate families, crammed into the belly of ships, barely clothed, lying next to strangers. If they were fortunate enough to survive the Middle Passage, they were transported to a new but unfamiliar land where they were officially placed in bondage and forced to labor until death. And the second part of this is that once here, they were treated like chattel, where women were raped, where their children were sold off to strangers, where men were emasculated, where men and women were stripped of their ancient cultural norms and tribal heritage, and where both were compelled to embrace the Bible as a means to de-heathenize them or cleanse them of their past, their cultural past. And they were relegated to the status of not being fully human, and would in time come to create this music in this condition of bondage in a form that I believe is North America's first genre of original music, despite the reality that initially these people did not even speak English. In fact, many of them, perhaps a third, were Muslims whose language was Arabic. And so this backdrop is fascinating to the creation of this very important music.
Thank you for that sobering and incredibly important backdrop. You know, the spirituals, they have that call and response pattern. What influence do you see in the call and response in spirituals?
Well, that intimate detail of their formation is tied to the fact that they these songs grew out of an oral tradition. And the songs rooted in the form of call and response is common to many cultures around the world. This is not a unique thing to anything with Afrocentric elements to it. But it is a cornerstone to the flavor of the music. More pointedly, I think it's good to note that these songs are strophic, and they're based on, in format, an anthem or hymn. And why that is because these folks, they were not slaves, they were enslaved. No one is born a slave. Were not allowed to sit inside some of these parish churches in the Deep South, but they were allowed to sit outside, and they would capture some of the narratives as they began to understand the English language and the relationship between those stories and biblical characters and narratives in the Bible that they eventually embraced. So over many, many decades and many generations, the music that you hear in the form of a spiritual is tied to what they heard inside those churches. And so they would reimagine these narratives in the form of identifying with the children of Israel, with the Hebrew children. And so their sense of freedom began to, if you will, walk along the same path as those enslaved Hebrews. And so out of that comes the underpinning for what created this music that's associated in many ways similarly to the Holocaust or to apartheid or any of the struggles in around the world in which people who are in a state of suffering find a way to elevate themselves past their condition, that even if they don't find freedom in this life, as many spirituals articulated, they look for it in the next life. So the call and response is a form, and it's an important aspect of it, but most of them are straight ahead, strophic, chorus, verse, chorus, verse.
Let's listen to Go Down Moses. This is performed by baritone Jubilant Sykes.
Oppressed so hard they could not stand, let my people go. Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt land.
His voice is so exquisite, so expressive, and I imagine an entire congregation singing the phrases, "Let my people go."
Well, that song is part of a category, a subcategory of spirituals that, as I've come to embrace them, that they fit into different categories under the umbrella of spirituals. You have sorrow songs, plantation songs, generally secular in nature, jubilees, and protest songs, which that one actually is. It's a song of protest. There aren't many in the canon of American spirituals. There are even spirituals that have double meanings, like Steal Away to Jesus. There are songs like I Feel Like a Motherless Child, which is a sorrow song. And even songs like Jimmy Crack Corn, which is a plantation song that actually grew into becoming part of the evolution of minstrelsy in the 1840s. And then there are jubilee songs in that great Getting Up Morning. And of course, the protest song, Go Down Moses, and even more modestly crafted songs, because some of these songs had to be sneaky in order to convey a message a twofold message of wanting freedom, but also wanting to be freed from the bondage. And in some cases, these songs indicated a signal to escape.
Yeah, you know, freedom from the bondage and the story of the Israelites, Exodus from Egypt. You know, God sent Moses to Pharaoh repeatedly to carry that message, "Let my people go." And each time Pharaoh refused. What do you see as this song also connected to Jewish Passover?
Well, that's digging a little deep into the weeds.
Okay.
I would say that the songs are more general in terms of narratives that deal with biblical characters. So you cited Moses, a key figure. Who will be the leader? In fact, there was a phrase that circulated among those enslaved, and it would be, "Are you the one?" And it was a word when any of those enslaved saw someone within their circle on the plantation who seemed to embody that character of being the leader for leading them to freedom. And you saw their characters who are really important, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, and when those names began to circulate around the parishes in the Deep South, it was common to say, "Are you the one who would lead them to freedom?" So in that sense, there's an enormous connection to the perils, but also the actual eventual travels, the journey to freedom by the children, the Israelite children.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Overby, ethnomusicologist, executive producer, and host of Wisconsin Public Radio's The Road to Higher Ground. You can join in. Do you have a favorite spiritual? What do you want to know about the legacy of spirituals in American music? What connections do you have to spiritual music? 800-642-1234. How do you see these spirituals played today, whether it's in people's earbuds, whether it's in church? Where do they emerge?
Well, if you're asking me about where are they performed today, mm-hmm. I would say rarely are they performed. And when they are, they're most often rendered by professional, classically trained artists, by and large. Let's remember that the vast majority of these spirituals were created by unknown bards. And quite amazingly, these melodies have lived on generation after generation for hundreds of years. And so they were very valuable to the settings with the emergence of the African-American church. Mm-hmm. And so as the church began to become more formalized, spirituals in the 1950s and 60s with the Civil Rights Movement were not as welcomed because they reflected on a time of suffering and bondage. And with that came the emergence of gospel music, which was much more optimistic. So you don't hear them much anymore. Some do. And one of the interesting things that I find about this music is that they're not folk songs, in my view. They're art songs. Hmm. And as you play that piece, it sounded in my ear like it was a piano that accompanied the singer. And that's most often how they're rendered. You don't hear many songs that are spirituals that are accompanied with a guitar, though you hear them in choral arrangements where they're in some cases a cappella. Now, that's not a hard and fast rule, but most often you'll hear them by classically trained, formally trained artists, operatic singers, if you will. And in some cases, they're fully orchestrated, thoroughly composed with this wonderful big sound behind the spirituals. But at their core, they're very simplistic songs in terms of their construct. In fact, and some of them are arietas, and they almost lean into being arias with the bigness of them, like Ride on King Jesus, that piece that has this great atmosphere to it of someone of great stature coming to set the people free.
I wonder how you feel about the role of Amazing Grace. You know, I think of my experiences with spirituals, and I was attending a funeral at an African-American church in Louisiana, and they played Amazing Grace. They played Down to the River to Pray. Very, very moving. What do you make of Amazing Grace in particular?
Well, Amazing Grace is not a spiritual. Amazing Grace was actually created by a captain on a slave ship, if you will. Mm. And at a point in his life, a point during his travels, he became really depressed and disenfranchised from the work that he was doing. And he felt bad. He was having intimate relationships with the cargo, if you will, the women. Mm. And it turned him. And he even wrote that verse in there that saved a wretch like me. He felt so badly. I forget the captain's name. But the mood of what he wrote is really important. And there's one line in it, since you're asking about Amazing Grace, that saved a wretch like me. I've never been comfortable with that particular word, wretch. Mm. I don't believe anyone is created in that context. But he included it because he felt so bad about what he was a part of. And so that's the truth related to Amazing Grace. Of course, it's done in many settings all over the world. I particularly love it when it's done with bagpipes.
Mm. Wow. Dr. Jonathan Overby, he's traveled the world, brings diverse and inclusive music to his show, The Road to Higher Ground. We're exploring the power of traditional spirituals. What connections do you have to spiritual music? What song did you learn in choir or sing at church that moves you to this day? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. WPR's daytime classical music host. They've been exploring traditional African-American spirituals as part of their lineups. We're talking about the enduring qualities of spirituals in American music, their backdrop here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dr. Jonathan Overby is here. He's hosted his show, The Road to Higher Ground, for 14 years, seeking out music makers, using music as a means to raise awareness of diverse groups worldwide. You can join in, 800-642-1234. I'm wondering if you could set the scene for us on how music was used in the Underground Railroad, the lyrics that gave geographical hints for safer travels. What do you see in the music?
Well, I call it simply signal music. Mm-hmm. And these songs, without throwing out too many titles, I'll use the word, the song Steal Away to Jesus. And so this entire idea of not just for the Underground Railroad, but just to get off the plantation and to try to head north, it was a very clever way, I think, of signaling that there was a train about to take off. There's even the song, "This Train, Don't Carry No Gamblers, This Train." And so all of these songs, in many ways, you can find a double meaning in them. Songs about trains or the trumpet sounds. Yeah, it's about a trumpet, but it's also a cue to gather because there is going to be movement away from the plantation. Or bells, or songs even about laying down a heavy load. I mean, if those enslaved knew that that was the signal piece to gather in the middle of the night to seek a better place, then you would know that in advance. It was a call to gather. And so whether it was about heaven or death or home or the crucifixion, angels, Mary, Jesus, children of the Israelite children, these songs really also, I should say, included songs about the master, but it was not about the earthly one, but rendered to imply such to their oppressor. And often, when they were heard, they were thought of as being wonderful songs. In fact, legend has it that the term spiritual was one that originates from a plantation overseer who heard those enslaved singing songs and just tagged the style, if you will, as songs that had spirit. And so that term stuck, and it's I think very fitting. The other thing that I think is important is that African Americans didn't create this music on their own. What they heard standing outside, sitting around the churches, those parish churches, means that there is an opportunity to embrace the music for its parallel to Eurocentric sacred music. And I think that is an important aspect to this, in which all of us, everyone, can feel as though they have some ownership with the creation of the music.
Let's listen to Wade in the Water. And this is being performed by Ella Jenkins and the Goodwill Spiritual Choir.
Band of the Israelite,
God is upon the troubles and waters.
escaping slaves, a song telling them to abandon the path, move into the water?
Well, it's emblematic of Moses leading the children of Israel across the Red Sea. Mm. And it's saying to them, wade in the water. It's been parted for you. You can trust that you can find freedom on the other side. So it's important, I think, when you hear these spirituals to see them with reverence and dignity and not romantically, though I think you can celebrate them with dignity. And so if you know the narratives, many of the key narratives in the Old Testament, then when you hear these songs, you can, I see a relationship with the story of Noah. Mm. I see the relationship between the song and what I hear about Moses.
I want to jump in here. Jane called from Willapack. I couldn't stay with us. Jane says she read a children's book by Rhonda Rutger and that the song Swing Low, Sweet Chariot was originally called Swing Low, Sweet Harriet, referring to Harriet Tubman, and wants to know if you have any insights there.
Well, I think Harriet Tubman is to be commended, remembered for the great work that she did and to be celebrated as a womanist leader. Nothing diminishes that. I will say this, that Swing Low, Sweet Chariot was a song about death. And that is the underpinning of that song. It is simply and directly about dying. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Now, that doesn't sound like a rally song. That sounds like a song that has a very funeralistic quality to it. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, quite a treat for me to look at these songs and see the diversity within the kind of topics that were covered and celebrated and related to biblical narratives.
Dr. Overby, such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure as well. Thank you for asking.
Dr. Jonathan Overby, host of The Road to Higher Ground on NPR News and Music Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have a link to the WPR Music blog post on spirituals. You can find it at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.